This is the order of battle!
Thanks for joining the Order of Battle podcast for another episode. Joel, Jason, and Sometimes A discuss collecting G.I. Joe, other 1/18 scale action figures, and in general, what sparks joy. It's a lot of things, but almost always toys. This is the Order of Battle podcast. I've got a great conversation for you guys today. After several volumes of trying to get our schedules to work, Dan Klingensmith Jr. sat down with Joel and I to discuss creating 375, or creating G.I. Joe, as it's called now. Book 13 is in Kickstarter mode right now, and book 14 is being worked on. The series is phenomenal. I love it. I've loved it before I knew Dan. I'm going to love it and bug him once it's finished. Hopefully you'll enjoy this conversation. And as much as I keep bringing up package design and engineering, in my enthusiasm, I forgot to mention that legitimately one of my favorite parts of his series is when he outlined how the blueprints were made. Holy crap. So enjoy and pick up his books. The Kickstarter's going on right now. You can get the whole series through the Kickstarter, usually at a pretty good discount. You can also get his books on his website directly or from him at shows. Okay, so I know that I came into your books at issue 3 or 4. I missed the first couple, and I quickly started getting them all, getting a second copy. But I didn't know you. Like, we had chatted over Facebook, etc., until we were standing at a bar with Dan Music. And Music is how, like, you and I became friends.
Was that, which JoeCon was that? It was JoeCon, though, right?
It was Con or Fest or something. I don't know at this point. I've had a lot of drinks with Music. Music and I have agreed and disagreed, picked on each other, and, you know, clinked glasses a number of times. But it's just kind of funny how our community works of, what do you mean you don't know this person? Let me go introduce you with a drink. And here we are, years later.
There we are now. Yeah. Grayer.
Grayer. Our children are older. Our guts are bigger. Yeah, the whole thing.
Yeah. I didn't want to go the gut way. You said it, not me.
Right.
I don't want to judge.
You've been in the community a lot longer than I have. But even before you were in the community as an archivist, like, how long have you been collecting? Did you ever have a dark period?
I'd say in the early 90s. That's when I stopped playing with them as a kid, right? At that point, I mean, I was always buying. Like, I remember buying Ninja Force at the store because it was like I wanted every ninja. I remember even, and I can't find the letter, but I remember mailing Hasbro trying to impress them, like, I have every ninja but the very first Snake Eyes. How can I get it? Yeah, you know, and they're like, there's a whole collector's market out there, essentially. Like, go get it on your own. We don't have that anymore. I never really stopped, I guess, buying them because I played up, you know, until a certain age and then kind of grow out of it for, you know, a little bit. And then the 90s, my mom was getting me 12-inch stuff, you know, the 12-inch Hall of Fame stuff, because she wanted to kind of keep the spirit of Christmas alive and stuff like that in the house. So I would get those. I would open them up and I'd actually put them in her china cupboard. So they sat next to all her nice china, which she was very patient and allowed me to do. It was in 1995. I graduated high school. I had some graduation money. It was a toy shop magazine where I saw the Chinese carded figures, like of Cobra Commander art and Destro. And some of those guys I just didn't have, like, you know, I didn't really have as a kid. Because I didn't really get into Joe until 84, where Mutt and Junkyard and Flint and Frostbite, so 84, 85, were my first three.
I mean, that's a great three.
Those are a great three. Still have them to today. I have a funny story about that if you guys want to hear. I don't know if I've ever shared it. I can't remember. But, you know, I've been, I guess, active, you know, since 95. I bought a big loose collection, ironically enough, from a guy in the same hometown as Ron Rudette. Like, later on, I realized this is hilarious. And I think I even found him on Facebook years later, like you sold me my first lot. You got me into this. Thanks a lot.
here's my debt. You can take it.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I was buying loose stuff and then I was buying carded stuff locally, just so cheap, $5 for 1993, 92, 94 stuff. So I was just like buying this stuff, carding them. And then somebody was like, well, are you a carded collector, or loose collector? And I didn't, you know, get 10. I'm young. I'm 18, 19. Like, well, I don't know how to make a choice, but okay. And so I got lucky and I got a big collection from 82 to 86, practically all carded. Dad helped fund it a little bit, paid him back, but he loaned me the money. But there's some stuff like missing, like UPCs and stuff like that. So I had to replace those over the years. So then I became a carded collector. Then I became a boxed vehicle collector with figures only. And then I went up and bought a collection up in Wisconsin. That's where I got my flag. Back then, I was buying, it seemed, a lot of ex-husbands' collections.
Okay.
Like, seriously, like two or three of my biggest collections I purchased were ex-husbands. Like, the wives got them, and they got rid of them to me.
That's painful. And also, at least it went to you and not somewhere else, right?
And I mean, I still regret some stuff because the one, I remember she mentioned she had a bunch of He-Man stuff in a basement. And when I went up there for the flag, but she pulled everything out. She had all the miscellaneous, like, odds and ends, like, small accessory things. And, you know, that was probably...
Everything you're saying here is just killing me that all through those late 90s where I wasn't doing it. And then when I tried to get back into it at the end of the 90s and I was too broke to do it, it still took a handful of years before I ventured back in. And then Joel, like, you weren't even capable of doing this as in the 90s because you were still just a kid.
Yeah, I was. I mean, besides like hand-me-downs and odds and ends yard sale stuff, my era of buying Joes for myself was the middle years. I remember specifically being at that like awkward age where you didn't want anyone to see you buying toys. Basically, I had to wait until I had a summer job to get anything. So like the rush of being able to actually purchase something and then also the rush of being kind of a little bit too old and like hoping that nobody I knew was like lurking around. But it's just funny how much that the shame and stress sticks with me as much as the joy of. But I'm curious to hear the story you were referencing with your three Joes.
Yeah, I mean, and I'll say this. We've all played the, this is for my nephew.
Yes.
This is for my, I mean, I didn't have kids. I was 18, 19, 20. Well, I mean, I guess I could have, but I didn't. They'd always ask. You know, it's always the old lady at the register who's like, what is this for, a birthday party? And they're like, yeah, my nephew. How and then they start asking questions, right? And then you're like, oh, like be careful with it though, like don't bend it, please. You know, I mean, there's only one time I ever got really mad, and that was during the Spy Troops era and all that stuff. I forget what vehicle it was like an armored truck with the little turret on top. I can't think what it's called, but you know, the lady just threw it in there and it was all damaged. And I'm just like, so I got home and just like just threw it. I'm like, why even keep this thing? Because, you know, that's the thing. I mean, I was a completist. So once I had all the vintage to what you're talking about, Joel, I mean, I went straight into all that stuff. Bill versus Cobra, Valor versus Venom Spy. Now, I've since sold a lot of it because of space. Where I'm sitting right now would have been where my shelving was for the vintage. And then behind me on this side was all the vintage vehicles in front of me. All the modern stuff was behind me. So it was like just not enough room.
In the 50th anniversary, when it was strictly a Toys R Us, there was one particular cashier that my wife and I would always joke about because he was about my age. You know, I'm kind of a young gun for the G.I. Joe collecting community, but this guy was just clueless. And it was like, I was in that Toys R Us legitimately 7 days a week looking, you know, and I knew the truck days and I knew, like, you know, like any other psychotic collector, every time I'd get to the counter. And I swear to you, true, it didn't matter what, like one time he literally asked me if I was buying these for like a Martin Luther King Jr. Day gift. And I was like, they're for me, man. I'm going to tell you the same thing every time. You work at Toys R Us. You know that most of your customers are adult men. It's not like it was later, you know, it was late enough in life where I just didn't care anymore. And, you know, we're going in and he just would ask like, I swear to you, true. I'm not exaggerating. Like he literally asked me if I was buying. I was like, I never heard of people giving gifts on Martin Luther King.
Secure holiday.
Yeah. Like
is this for pizza day or something? Yes. Like, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yep. But anyways, I'm sorry. So tell us about your first three with the story.
So, of course, those are my first three characters. And as I got older, you know, you tend to lose things, right? And so I had lost those guys. Lost them, you know, I never thought about them. This is when I was much younger. I wasn't a collector, of course. There's a Christmas that they had wrapped them up. Apparently, my dad had been cutting the grass and, you know, came across them. They were buried in the dirt on the side yard. And I know exactly where they were. And he found them and he, you know, rinsed them off and all that jazz. And he wrapped them up and gave them to me for Christmas. So
that's incredible.
And I was just like, what? What are these? He's like, oh, I found them in the yard. They're all buried. And I rinsed, cleaned them up for you a little bit. I mean, they still had, you know, rust on their screws, still had rusty screws and everything. But that's why it's like, you know, I still have them to this day. You know, most wobbly knees you'll ever see. But, you know, they're still my first three. And, you know, I'll never get rid of those. And that's one of the rules I always made when I first started collecting was, nothing from my childhood, although I did mix some of the loose stuff in, you know, which I'm happy about, which I'm not happy about. I mean, it doesn't matter at this point. But my role was always like, if I ever get an emergency or need to sell, at least my personal collection as a kid will stay with me. Like, I will not get rid of my loose Joes as a kid.
They made it back to you the second time. You might as well keep them.
Yeah, exactly.
Did you grow up in Arizona or are you from the Northeast?
Northeast Ohio.
Okay.
Another Ohio.
The mecca of toys.
It's funny. All those guys in Ohio now, I didn't know them back. There's one guy I didn't meet who he's kind of not really involved in the community anymore, but I remember seeing him at a show once and I'm like, he looks so familiar. And it turned out like he was in high school selling stuff. He had the Desert Apache. I remember that because I could never find that thing. He had like three of them. So I bought all of them because I'm like, these are so, I cannot find these. I know it's not the most sought out now, but they're hard back then.
I mean, they're still hard now.
Yeah, I mean, they're still fairly hard. But I mean, I know they're not the most popular. I know they don't, you know, figures don't fit well and stuff. But it was just that. And there are two vehicles outside of like the Sears and all that stuff. There was that and one other that I just could never find. I think the Ultimate Enemies pack and Target Hit and Run, those were pretty hard to find. So I had a hard time getting those. The Viper Glider and Falcon Glider I found. Again, these are part of the giant collections I bought. And then the Sears, Dreadnought, and Ground Assault, and then the Vamp. Those were, I knew where they were. They were just pricey. Like you said, when you're 18, 19, 20, 21, you know, making minimum wage back in that time.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have a huge amount of money. But I remember sitting there, and I finally, when I moved here, I just bit the bullet and did it, even though I was freaking broke. I mean, I was broke. But I bought the Dreadnought and Ground. I think I paid $500 per, if I recall. And that was a lot.
I was broke and I passed on one of the sets for $350. And then a year later, they were going for $400 each. Like not even as the set. And I was like, well.
Which set is that?
I don't remember if it was, I can't remember if it was the ground or the air, but it was the Dreadnought. And it was just like a year after I passed on $350 for both vehicles, it was like $400 each. And I was like, well, I'll have to wait.
Yeah, I mean, that's like when the chance came up to buy the Deep Six, the Killer Whale, you know, the guy's like, I only have a few. So he's like, you want one or not? As the most expensive figure I had to pay at that time.
So you have one of the Killer Whales?
Yeah. So I bought mine like 99-ish.
I know a couple people with a Killer Whale. I will probably never have one unless, you know, somebody wills it to me.
I mean, there was a guy, I mean, I sold one through in pre-pro not long ago or whatnot. I mean, someone did come across one, ironically enough. I mean, it was cracked bubble, but still.
Yeah, still. How else are you going to get it, right?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was very fortunate to get that. I mean, that guy, I don't know what happened to him, to be honest with you. I mean, I bought a couple things from him. This is all game, you know, Joe forums and all that fun stuff. So
I think that's interesting. You and the other archivists in our community, like Pat and Phil and Carson and Murray and Sam, you guys all had the wherewithal or the whatever you want to call it to get back into it in the mid-90s and stay in it this whole time. It's never gotten dull. You guys have been able to capitalize on that early in and feed this other historian archivist side of yourselves that folks coming in today, they really can't do that. So there's a bit of magic coming in early like that, whereas somebody like me, I came in a little late, maybe a decade late, and I could still be involved and I can still do things. I can still contribute, but you know, you guys are already laying the groundwork that I'm using to do my research to get to a point where I can contribute. And I think that's really neat. And that's why, like with your books, I have recommended them to everyone.
Appreciate it.
We weren't friends when I first started reading your books. So it's purely they're fucking good. That's one of the things that I loved about like what you're doing versus what some of the others in your peer group are doing is that you're not just showing off like the production, the pre-production stuff, but like you, the beginning of each of your book, the first chapter of each of your books talks about the process and in a real specific ass way. So I can only imagine, and you can talk about it if you want, but you might have already done that, but I can only imagine how much paperwork and hours of asking the same question five times to get to this level of like really unnecessarily esoteric detail. And I'm loving it.
I know I lose people. I joke with a lot of people. You know, people get the books, majority, you're not the majority. You know, they just flip through them. And I'm cool with that. Because I mean, there'll be a buddy of mine like, hey, I just learned this. And I'm like, yeah, I shared that out like three volumes ago. Like, you just threw yourself under the bus. I know you didn't read it. Yeah, you know, and I give him a hard time.
Sure. I mean, most of us aren't going to. I mean, I flip through it regularly. I've only read them like twice. That's normal with reference books.
Half of what I'm writing sometimes, you know, I have to go back and get some clarity. You know, like a lot of the tooling process, a lot of that was new, you know. Yeah, because the first four books are, you know, Kirk had written that beginning part about the history of Job. And then from there, you know, during that time, venturing to like, what do I want to do next? Like, what do I want in the beginning? And that's why I started with the figure design and then the sculpt, because that's tied to the figures. And my thing was always about where am I going to marry them? You know, because you have the vehicles and then, you know, how do you marry everything together? And the tooling process, or not the tooling, the sales process or marketing. Like, where does that come in? Because that's been there the whole time, right? It's worked out well. I mean, I'm happy how it's worked out. But you know, just laying out those ideas and where are things going to end? Like I said, I just wrote 13, 14 essentially together. The next book's going to cover commercials and Toy Fair. And that should be it. That should be the wrap of it.
Well, it can't be the wrap of it because we need about 10 more.
Yes. I'll make up some stuff, some new processes. No. Yeah, it's been very interesting. I mean, the sculpting process, I know that's heavily detailed. You know, you brought up a good point. You know, the amount of interviews I've had and knowledge and the trust I've had with these guys and sharing it with me has been great. I mean, I'm very grateful for everybody. And it's really about finding the right people. It wasn't always, yeah, hey, you know, hey, call this guy. He's going to be really open to talking to you, right? It wasn't that way in the beginning. I mean, when this concept came, I want to say it's like I'm here in 08. And right around that time, I want to say 07, 08. I can't remember when Ron did that interview with Yojo with Kevin Watson for Yojo, but there's a date on there.
I don't know the date.
It was that interview that inspired me. It's just the last line I think he said about something about, I think, marketing getting a lot of the credit. You know, I understand where he's coming from because I know corporate America and how that works, but marketing was part of the big picture and the team. So, I mean, they do deserve, you know, some credit as well, but I'm a firm believer it took a team effort. And that's where I've gotten a lot of the buy-in from these guys and gals because they see that I'm not just about the designers. I mean, it's a design heavy book. Don't get me wrong. Like, people, you understand that, but you know, I try to incorporate as much as I can from engineers, from designers, marketers. You know, if someone has a funny story about, you know, vehicle that they did this and that to it. I mean, I try to share as much as I can, what people are willing to share.
The engineering stuff that you shared over the last few was incredible. That stuff really floored me because it was very specific. And it was stuff that I wasn't aware of or didn't know. You know, and they were talking about different types of pencils and paper and I mean, it's very specific.
So I'd probably lose people sometimes, but again, it wasn't easy for me to write because I sometimes would have to go back and like, talk to me more about this. Like, what am I writing here and how can I make it make sense to the
accessible?
Yeah.
That is what shines in this book. It's not meant to, like, every word isn't meant for every person. There are plenty of people that may not give a shit how the packaging is designed, but there's just as many of us that are. But if you don't care how the packaging is designed, you might care about what's on page 7 or what's on, you know, your favorite character is in a couple different issues. I was trying to find like a theme of every issue, but it feels to me, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but your character selection isn't so much, there are some themes in there, some groupings in there, but it's more along the lines of making sure that most years, if not all, are represented instead of being like, oh, this is the Night Force theme or the Tiger Force theme. But it's more along the lines of let us celebrate the whole run at once in each volume, which gives everybody an in.
Yeah, I mean, like Joel, I don't know how old you are, but like you said, you're probably doing the 90s, right? That's your childhood era, right?
Yeah, I'm like a severe young gun for the collecting community. Okay. Well, for this specific brand, but I was born in 89. You know, active years were definitely in the 2000s.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, so that's cool because, you know, when I had all that stuff, I always wondered, like, you know, when I was looking to sell it, like, am I selling it too soon? Should I wait, you know, for guys your age? You know, are they going to be interested in Joe as much as I was, right? It just is time to move on from it. You know, I just needed the space and the funds could help out with other things. But, you know, I guess that's the thing. When I first started the book and not knowing where it was going to go, first book was really about recognizing everybody who had contributed up to that point, right? Yeah, I wanted to make sure if this was going to be a one and done, at least I could say I did what I said I was going to do, and that was to recognize as many people as I could. And that's what I set my goal towards.
I think that's a great goal. And I think you accomplish it because every volume, there's a handful of names that I know. There's a handful of stories that I already know, but then there's also just as much that I don't. I don't think you accomplished that just in issue one, but you've accomplished that repeatedly throughout the issues.
You know, when I did volume one, you know, the original intent was maybe 4 books, then it became 8 books, then it became 12 books, and here we are, we'll be at 14. So it just continued to grow, you know, with people coming up with stuff, or like the guy I just talked about recently this week, you know, hey, I found some more renderings. Okay, let's do it. You know, let's add it. I mean, I'm all about sharing it out and getting, you know, allowing people to see the history just as much as I do. I mean, I get excited about that stuff and that motivates me. You know, in my research, you know, I purposely would not. So, you know, kind of the layouts that people ask, because I know people want to do 82 to 86 or 87, you know. But again, to your point, I wanted to recognize as many people. But yeah, I'm strategic to some extent. I mean, I know I have my A-ers, my B-ers, my C-listers. And then kind of fill in the gaps. And that's upon a popularity sometimes. But I know like number 2 is very heavy with key characters, right? I just know that, right? Volume 8, I did play off the Crimson theme because I had the Crimson Guard and the Crimson Twins. So I try to play a little bit into it. This one, you know, the color is kind of like a grayish right now. I need to get my proof. But yeah, it's kind of playing off the Snake Eyes 85, a little bit off Night Force. You know, I'd even consider doing like some like glow in the dark cover, which I haven't really talked to him about the pricing on it, but potentially could be something I do.
Well, speaking of pricing, I mean, you print in the United States, so your pricing is going to be a little higher than like, you know, a Print Ninja book from China, but you also get it crazy fast when you Kickstarter with you.
Yeah.
I mean, there's give and take right there, but being able to print in the US, I mean, that's phenomenal.
It is. And the printer I use has been the same printer for all the books. You know, the prints, I've kind of gone to different printers, but the books have all been the same. And again, it's funny because, you know, you just get quotes later on just to see, but then you don't want to break up the consistency either. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very proud of what I've been able to do in printing the U.S. I mean, it is local. You have more control because I did originally taught. I did have a connection through a Hasbro contact with a printer in China. But then, you know, there's some issues there and I just like, my gut was telling me this doesn't feel right. Right. And so I went with the local printer. Yeah. I did a lot of research locally, not gonna lie. Found this one, you know, they had a good record as far as they've been around a long time. They're kind of older company. The longevity matters to me as far as that. And it is a family owned business at one point. That's always a good thing. It's not a big corporate company, you know, in that sense, like nationwide. So, yeah, I mean, I'm very, and like you said, the timeliness, I mean, what I launched 2 days ago, right? Or no, yesterday, right? Is yesterday. I got approved. So Hasbro, again, I submitted everything to Hasbro. So I have a very timely process. Like when I'm going to go to launch, I don't want to launch when the book's not done. essentially. Like, the book is done. When I launched, the book is done. It's already at Hasbro being approved. And I got my approval today already. So this is going to probably move even faster than normal. Once it funds, then I'll send things to the printer. I mean, I need to have the funds. So I'll send everything over so I can get my proofing ready. And then by the time the Kickstarter is ending, I'm essentially like telling the printer, because usually it funds early enough, right? To where I'll say, go to print, let's do this. And then, you know, they do their printing because they're wrapped and shrink wrapped. That takes a little bit extra, a couple extra days to shrink wrap them all. But I want them protected, as of course. And then I usually get them out within a week. And I've got a very good system now. You know, originally, you know, my wife and I would help, or she would help. Now, you know, occasionally my kid will help maybe do some of the tissue paper stuff. But occasionally my son will help label or tape them up. But I have a very good system now where I literally will pretty much do all the books by myself. I mean, again, it's not 3,000 books, which would be awesome. But, you know, 300 or so I can get done within a weekend.
Sure.
You know, watching some football, or it depends on the time of the year, watch a movie or a couple movies just to have background noise. But
one of the things you just mentioned was having it shipped off to Hasbro. So midway through your run, Hasbro decided to get involved. It probably wasn't that offhanded, but so that your title went from 375 Joe over to Creating G.I. Joe, because now Hasbro's involved and you could legally say G.I. Joe.
Exactly.
Instead of pretending like you said G.I. Joe by saying 375 Joe.
Yeah.
You know, are they behind you in any sort of decisions in like reprinting the first half so it all has a consistent name, or pushing into the middle years, or having you be a part of anything bigger? Or is this really just you're on a licensee, it's what you want to do, and they just sign off on, they agree that you can keep using G.I. Joe for what you've done?
Yeah, I mean, it's been a very smooth, I guess, relationship, if you want to say. When I started the book series, if you look at the very couple first books, you know, there's one logo, and then it changed, because I was asked by someone at Hasbro to change it at that time, even though it was still 375. And then then once I got the license, you know, I didn't have much inventory as far as some of those earlier ones. And I had a distributor who was interested in buying a good portion or a good number of each volume.
Nice.
You know, and they didn't care what cover. So because of that, I was able to, you know, I essentially ran out. So I had to go back to the printer and get reprints, because in the beginning it was tough because I was doing a lot of reprints. Because again, you don't know how many you're going to sell when you're starting this type of stuff. And I didn't, and again, I thought I was only going to do 4 to 8. So I wasn't doing big runs, and I still don't do huge runs, but, you know, I was going back, and, you know, when you do small runs, especially here in the US, it's more expensive, you know? Yes. So now you're like, hey, yeah, I'm coming back for a couple hundred. And they're like, yeah, well, that's now your book just gone up per price or per book. And I'm like, holy, you know, so it was nice, you know, I was able to do that. Plus, I mean, there's a couple minor things, volume one. I know I added, I think I had color art now for my Junkyard, as well as Keel Hall. I think volume two, I skid mark page, I think I updated with color of him. Other than that, every book's been the same essentially. But yeah, when I talked to them, I'll be honest. I mean, I had considered redoing the series, because at that point I only had, what, 6 books out, I think. But I had 6 books out. You know, I contemplated redoing them. I was going to, you know, restructure them. I was going to do the size a little bit different. There were some things, you know, I was trying to include a lot more of certain type of art, you know, but at the time, you know, they had some type of agreements with another another company. So it was kind of maybe like stepping on their toes at the time. So, you know, they kind of, you know, they're allowing it, but the whole book can't contain, right? Which is fine. It is what it is. So I decided just, you know, I didn't know how to redo that. Like, if I put these books out again, you know, I don't want to make people mad. Like, well, hey, you know, I already have these 6. Like, now what? You know, and now I have to buy them all over again. And, you know, just because you changed the format of the layouts and stuff. But when I'm done with this, I will show some of those, I'll be honest, just to kind of see what people's thoughts are. Because, you know, there is, who knows, maybe someday, you know, put them all together. I don't know.
A hardback with a stitching. I mean, you know, listen, I'm not going to say no.
No, but I mean, I looked at the slipcase that the printer showed me recently. He had a mock-up. I mean, that thing's just like, it's very like wide. And I'm like, there's no way you know, you can get a book this thick, you know, bound. So it had to be at least two books, I'm assuming. But yeah, so, I mean, they've been very good. The process has been very seamless. I mean, I have my contact over there, and, you know, when I have questions, I contact them. If I have concerns of any sort, I contact them. So it's been a good relationship. I mean, I really have no complaints whatsoever.
That's awesome.
They've been very supportive, and even some of these extra things like the Zartan card back went to them. I mean, there's limitations of what I can and can't do.
Sure.
You know, in regards to what my licensing agreement is, but the Zartan card back was, you know, approved, and I thought that was a fun project. The upcoming card backs I'm going to be doing, which hopefully, you know, once I hit 12K on there, which should hopefully happen within the next couple of days, even before maybe this is up.
Well, I mean, and you've been using Kickstarter for a while, so you are very intimate with the balloon and ebb of Kickstarter. But I noticed, like, from the people that I am friends with in the community and I commune and converse with regularly, everybody is a day one jump in when you kickstart. You know, by day three, nobody I know is like, oh, is it up? Oh, I gotta go do that. Everybody's already signed on. So I know there are a lot of us that whether they're friends with you or not, like, they're definitely fans and they're in right away. That helps that middle part of the Kickstarter that is always a drag for everyone, regardless of your size. I don't know your numbers, but to me, your system looks very successful. And I'm glad I found you early, and I have been a part of this for as long as I have, because I love these books. And then getting to know you over the years has just been even better. It's part of what makes us a community, not just a shopping experience.
Yeah.
I see you at a couple different shows every year. We've talked about getting together outside of shows, just life is busy, and then COVID and everything else. But you're going to be in Iowa in November.
That's the hope. I was looking at flights again tonight, because I was going to book last night, and then I was waiting on my son to decide. And then I went on tonight, and I already jumped up like almost $100. I don't know. I'm trying to play it out and see what happens here, but that's the goal.
I'm making the drive.
Okay. Yeah.
I don't know what the drive looks like for you. For me, it's 9.5 hours, but I'd rather drive 9.5 hours for, you know, two tanks of gas and be able to bring A instead of having to buy two plane tickets. And last year, plane tickets jumped up to like $600, which I cannot justify $600 from Nashville to Des Moines. That sounds insane to me. I already pay like $550 to get to Seattle.
Yeah.
You know, now bringing a kid, I'm not flying. But your drive might be more than mine.
Yeah, I never really mapped it out, to be honest with you, but
probably 17-ish.
I mean, just to get to Flagstaff, and that's still in state, that's at least three and a half hours. So, you know, just, that's in state. So Arizona is kind of one of the weird states. Just to get to like LA, 6 hours. You know, it doesn't seem like it would be, but it is.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, you're the Southwest, so you got to make it through that. You got to make it through the middle of the country to get to the middle of the country.
Yeah. So, I mean, my hope is to go. I mean, that is my intention. Like I said, I probably should have booked sooner. There's some things out of time, you know, and then I had to wait for baseball schedules to come out and stuff. So, anyway, it's working out there, you know, and just got to bite the bullet and just book the ticket, of course. And then hopefully there's still room for the dinner and all that fun stuff. But
last year you were there tabled with Ron, or tabled beside Ron.
Yeah, right next to Ron. Yep.
I didn't know if you were with him or just beside him, but I mean, Ron Rudat was there last year for the first time. I don't know if he's doing it this year or not. I don't know who the guests are this year. I know last summer I randomly in Chicago at a celebrity signing convention that we never should have tabled at. It was awful. But I randomly met one of your friends. He's someone I've met, but D'Oliva.
Cesspool.
And then he came on and hung out with us here. We did a great episode. He was very candid, had a lot of fun talking about all of the marketing of G.I. Joe in the 90s and the commercial and the launchers and the neon. But when I met him, it was because I was wearing a Joe shirt that it's our podcast, but it is the Ninja Force stuff. And so, you know, he had a hand in that. And when we started talking, he asked if I knew you. And so I was like, yes, I do, blah, blah, blah. And so that was kind of for, I guess for him, it was like, oh, not only are you wearing a Joe shirt, you have a Joe podcast, but you also know a mutual, like we have a mutual friend. You have a long friendship with him. It just kind of goes back. It's kind of funny to me, like how many of us are just so simply connected over the years. And you are a big connector in terms of some of these people from Hasbro that we've lost contact with, or we only see at JoeCon, but we haven't really been seeing them a lot at JoeFest.
Yeah.
So the book is a good way for other people to connect with these amazing creatives, marketers, designers, et cetera.
It really is. And the people who are participating, like I said, you know, even this last book, I talk about the sales process in volume 13. I didn't really know many salespeople, right? And between Kirk and Vinny, you know, they introduced me to, you know, recognize the last name, Neil Levine, which is Don Levine's son.
Oh, nice.
And so Neil and I have now become friends. And he's awesome. I mean, he has such great things, such great memories. He's the national sales manager, like for Target. He was, you know, really big at Target, you know, as far as the sales process and getting Joe at Target. And then also the gentleman who I've known for many years, he was essentially the same role for Toys R Us. So I got a lot of good insight. And, you know, Ed Gorshowitz is that gentleman, and he's actually Claymore for Mission Brazil.
That's where I know the name. Okay, yes.
So he's actually Claymore, is, you know, and there's a whole story behind him and how that all came to be. And that's what I kind of write about with Mission Brazil in this upcoming book. I have a little bit of pre-pro, but a lot of it's his story. And I wanted to recognize it, even though I didn't have a lot of pre-production. He shared that story so many years ago, 2012, I think, when we first interviewed. And I was like, I got to get it in. Like, I got to fit it in. So I fit that in there.
That's incredible.
But yeah, it's been such a fun process. And then, you know, just the Toy Fair stuff. I mean, it's, hey, yeah, you need to go reach out to this person. And everybody's been very welcoming for the most part. I mean, yeah, I reached out to, found someone I needed to reach out to who had a big part in Toy Fair and took my call. And, you know, we never talked before, but she's very nice and shared a lot of details, because I talked to HasCon. I don't know if you remember him, but Bob Laveau, who did a lot of packaging art and stuff, but he had done a lot of Toy Fair photography. And so he and I had talked, and he walked me through the process of that.
That's incredible.
Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing, the relationships. And that's the thing. Like, a lot of these guys and gals, I do truly consider friends. And as you know, I do a lot of selling for them.
I've picked up a couple things, yes.
So, I mean, I want them to get the money. You know, I want them to get what they deserve. They've held on to this stuff for so many years. And so, you know, when I first started selling, you know, a couple people had asked me, like, hey, will you help? It wasn't me. It's more the other way around. Like, will you help me sell some of the stuff? I trust you, so I want you to help me. And, you know, they've been taken advantage of in the past and stuff. So, you know, I've built good relationships with them. Beyond that, I mean, just shooting the, you know what? I mean, there's some people I have to schedule conversations with or interviews. There's probably some I don't necessarily have to, but I feel I should, just because of the relationship we have. And then there's others who I could just call right now if it's not too late, and they would just shoot the shit with me. So like old college buddies, in a sense.
That's kind of the magic of what you've been able to put together. And I know I've picked up a few things from you through either mutual friends or you know, some of these employees selling off some of their long treasured mementos. That continues today. You still are doing that for a number of people.
Yeah. Right now I have three different people right now I'm selling for right now, literally. And one of them's a widow. Her husband, ironically, they moved down here to Arizona. We were going to meet up and we just never did. And he disappeared and I couldn't figure out why. And then he had passed literally the weekend after. She found my email. She said, hey, I got all this stuff I don't know what to do with. And a lot of it's 12-inch stuff, because he was a Kenner guy. But he had sent me some photos years ago. And then when I went over her house, you know, there's a couple of things I wanted, you know, that she had. They're just mock-up of these pinup girls or whatever. Just, I thought they were just funny pieces, which I later found out that they essentially took them from a calendar, which I found as well and bought. But yeah, she had some of that and a couple other things that I wanted. But mainly, I went over there to kind of help take pictures. I mean, she has stuff signed by people like Francis Curry. the one gentleman who's in the astronaut character for the 12-inch. I think Omar Bradley maybe on one. So there's some, you know, really cool pieces that she has signed that, you know, I was able to find a 12-inch collector who will appreciate this stuff. He's kind of my go-to when I find stuff.
We have a pretty healthy 12-inch crew and community. They're still showing up to shows. They're still collecting and finding and digging. And so that's cool that you have a couple contacts, because you're not a 12-inch collector yourself.
No, I mean, I have my Hall of Fame stuff. And I got a couple of things like the Tom Hanks head. And before the Hall of Fame Duke, there's a preliminary Duke that was done. So I have a head for that. But not a ton of 12-inch. I mean, like I said, I got a couple pieces from her. Some are probably different than production, to be honest with you. But she had some... she had some stuff that was pretty neat as far as unpainted, or she had the football players, like the Navy and Army gentlemen, you know, players came out. I think they're African-American, but they had one white hand on each of them. This is like the weirdest thing. She had a couple mock-up boxes and stuff like that. So again, I'm just trying to help her. She has the Wonder Woman thing that I have up right now. That's going to bring some good money. And she's actually looking to move back to where her family is. So that's a lot of this. That's why I'm trying to get her as much as I can. And then there's a Star Wars piece from Micro Collection. It's going to be a 4-to-1.
Oh, wow.
That's going to bring her some good money. So that will bring her a good chunk, which I'll be happy about. But then, like I said, the other two people, one guy reached out and just said, hey, you know, can you help me move a couple things? You know, I can use the funds right now. And then the other one, I just been with doing as many books as I've been doing this last year. I just had to put kind of a lot of that on the back burner and, you know, and selling. And they know, they understand, they're fine with it. But I figured since I had a little bit of time right now, let me see what I can do. Holidays are coming, you know, so I put up a couple other pieces as well. They still have a good chunk of stuff, not just G.I. Joe, but other stuff that I need to help them move. And then there's another gentleman who I sold a lot for years ago, who we're going to start back up probably here at the end of this year or early next year. So there's stuff out there and it's coming. It's just, you know, I had a sake of time, full-time job and kids and books. I had to kind of figure out how am I going to balance it all.
In terms of books, once Hasbro signed on to what you were doing and gave you the ability to use the G.I. Joe name legally, you have been foot on gas pedal. You've been really burning through and I'm loving it, but it's also giving me no small amount of unhappiness thinking that the series is going to end soon. So
yeah, it'll be interesting to see. I mean, because I was putting out about 2 books a year, but you know, when contracts are written and signed, you know, there's time frames attached to it. You know, you have to kind of abide by those things. Yeah. So, I mean, I've been putting them out a lot more often than not. But yeah, I don't know. It's going to be bittersweet.
We have all of the 90s and early 2000s. I mean, only Kavanaugh's covered that. So, I mean, there's a...
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, I'll be honest. A lot of the stuff that built the last few, you know, one of the designers had lost a lot of his stuff. I had a lot of his artwork in an Excel file, but it's so low res, I couldn't use it. And he just emailed me one day and said, go check your WeTransfer files. And he sent me like 4 different emails because they're so big. And, you know, that's the free version, I think, holds 2 gigs, right? So he sent me 4 different files with all this stuff. And I'm like, what the? I said, I thought you lost all this, or because he lost his hard drive. He goes, yeah, a good old compact disc. So he had saved it all on compact disc.
Holy shit.
You know, has allowed me to show his stuff because I didn't have a lot of his stuff in the books. And he had a significant part in Joe. And I just didn't have a lot of it. So I'm just like, I'll show what I can. You know, I'll do my best. But now, because of what he's provided, you know, has allowed me, that's where, how I'm able to do what I'm at now. You know, and then, like I said, the unproduced stuff is going to be an interesting mix. And I'm still trying to figure out how I'm going to lay that out. I think you and I were talking the other day, just like, normally I do by year, right? Some of the stuff's undated, and to sit there and try to figure out like, okay, what came first? I'm probably going to just do it based on designer, you know, and I mean, in the order, like, you know, I'll do Ron and Wayne first, like, you know, they'll be the first part of the book. And then we'll lead into Guy Cassaday and Dave Kunitz and Bill Young and Frank Caronius and Dave Hassel and then Kurt Grown. And so it'll follow a sequence of maybe when they work there per se. There's odds and end things that people designed that weren't even designers, really. They worked on Joe, but they weren't like, that's not their primary role, but they still did some stuff. And so there's like a shuttle that I believe someone had done, and, you know, that's not their primary role, but it's pretty cool. It's like a traditional shuttle. So I'll show that out in number 14.
Something that's interesting me a lot these days is in modern action figure design, it doesn't seem to be as singular as it was back then, right? Like Ron sat at his desk. He did the drawings for the first, 120-ish or so characters. There wasn't a lot of like, he did the drawing and then somebody else came along and like did the rest of his drawing or helped him with his drawing, right? I mean, maybe there was some of that, but it didn't seem like there was a lot. It feels, and maybe it's the lore of it, but it feels very singular artist designed. And then a singular sculptor or two or three sculptors hit that part hard. And then it feels very singular. Whereas in today's design process, you might have a couple of different people working on a figure because it's all digital. And like you could be working on the body while Joel is working on the secondary gear and I'm working on a head sculpt. It seems a little more democratized, right? And maybe that is not an accurate perspective, but that's what it seems like to me.
The early sculpts, though, were broken up. You know, different people did different parts. Yeah, Jim Tully did the heads. I think Kurt Hinman did the arms, if I'm correct. And I think Bill Culbertson did a lot of the torsos. I think another gentleman, I'll say Donnelly, but I'm not sure if that's correct or not. And then Roger Avery, you know, did some things, too. You know, and then eventually they had to farm it out. You know, then they bought it and then they eventually got Bill Merklin. And I mean, I have Polaroids that had two different sculptors for the same figure. Like they were testing out in some years, like, okay, you know, here's Bill's, here's his other person's.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, so I have different, sometimes I have different Polaroids of like the bat, like with the wider head and all that stuff. Like I think that was done by someone else. And so it's interesting to see kind of, you know, what people did. And then eventually they did farm it out to some other people outside sculptors, you know, that I've met over the years. I mean, there's two I know from the 90s I've met who one I knew for a long time and then was able to kind of purchase some things from him in the last year to help kind of fill some gaps. And then another one was a woman who I'm trying to remember how I came across her, but she was really helpful. She provided some Polaroids and stuff of waxes that she had worked on and sculpture sheets and stuff that she had laying around. So
that's incredible.
Yeah. So it's amazing to me what survived out of that era. You know, I mean, I have had those horror stories where, you know, someone I was talking to recently, they worked at, you know, it wasn't Hasbro, it was Griffin Bacall. And he's like, yeah, and we were talking. He's like, yeah, I had all that stuff. I had all my paperwork, blah, 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 blah. He was a couple years back. I don't know if it was like right before COVID or right around COVID. He's like, yeah, I just pitched it all. It's like, well, I just figured who the heck wants this stuff? Like, what am I going to do with this stuff? And I'm just like, me, you know, as you can see behind me, that is a lot of my archive. So
that is gutting.
All those binders in the middle eye or shelf are a lot of the artwork, sculpt sheets, all that stuff from every year. And then above that, a lot of the memos and stuff. So I'm very fortunate in many ways, not only to get it, but also that the fact that people actually preserved it for as long as they did.
Yeah, absolutely. I'm in my bedroom office where I record audio for work. So there's no nice display or anything behind me. One of the most compelling setups I've seen, you know, in doing this and recording with people and being on camera with, or even like going into their homes was when we sat down with Vinny and he had that Matchbox desk and I was floored.
Isn't that awesome?
His setup is gorgeous. I mean, it's not what you're talking about with what your setup is, because your setup is more of an archivist, where his is just, he's surrounded by the things he loves.
He loves toys.
And his discipline to one in, one out is something that I do not have. And
yeah, we've talked about it. He has a very good system. And we'd even talked about doing something. I can't remember if it was after COVID. I think it was. You know, doing some type of podcast and something like that, which, you know, maybe we'll still eventually do, because, you know, I was honored that he'd ask.
He would be great.
Oh, yeah. It'd be fun.
He would be great. I mean, not only has he worked at Hasbro and at all of these other toy companies, and he knows all this stuff over 40 years, but he's really personable, really easy to talk to, and has great stories.
Yeah.
I think he could put out a handful of episodes and no one would get bored.
No. And I mean, that's the thing. So, you know, I keep saying it in the books, toy files, toy files, toy files, toy files. It is coming. And I already have, you know, who I bring on first. And it's a time, you know, it's all about timing. You know that. I mean, you know, we have full-time jobs and, you know, lives and stuff. So,
I mean, in terms of timing, you and I started talking about doing this very thing at what, like book 8?
Exactly.
Every couple of books, like one of us would bring it up, and it's not a, you know, it just is what it be. And for me, I want to have you on and do this because I want to provide value to you. I hope that someone is listening that goes, oh shit, I don't have this. I didn't know about it. Or I saw it, but is it really worth my time? And now they go, oh fuck, yes, it is. because I could just have you on to just talk stupid shit. But like, I definitely want you on to talk about your books because outside of our personal relationship, I am a fan of your work. I am a fan of, I'm a book person. So you already know, we've talked about this. You've seen my bookshelves and it's why I have like 2 copies.
Well, I appreciate that.
Well, technically 1 copy is in A's room on his bookshelves and 1 copy is in the toy room on my bookshelves. I love history and archiving and things like that about the things I'm passionate about. And I don't think there's enough. Broadly speaking, in the toy world, there's a lot of generalized things and there's a ton of Star Wars stuff. But, you know, G.I. Joe is unique in how just thick and fervent and educated and hungry we have in our community for archivists. We talk about Yo-Jo a lot, even though it's kind of dead at this point. But
yeah,
but then 3D Joes and then, you know, Kavanaugh doing all the middle year stuff. Carson doing the art stuff, declassified as an entity, and all of the different projects they have their hands in, like the ones we just mentioned. And then there's Josh and Roger with the After Action Report, and you with creating G.I. Joe. And even before that, you had like Daryl DePriest doing the 12-inch stuff. And there were other people as well whose names I'm spacing on at the moment. But earlier this year, last year, shit, I can't even remember anymore. The guys in Spain, you know, put out an 8-volume hardback G.I. Joe set of just G.I. Joe that came out in Spain, not just the figures, but all the way down to yo-yos, which I know like Dan and the After Action guys are talking. And it is amazing to me how this community is so not just hungry, but active in digging up and finding and sharing this information at such a high level. It's almost an embarrassment of riches that we get to be bored by the standard stories of how G.I. Joe was made or how Larry wrote the comics or how Ron designed some things or what Kurt, like we, it's an embarrassment of riches that these are the stories that are so commonplace, you know? And so what you put into these books is so damn delicious. and you're right. You may lose people because they're not interested, but that's on them.
It's a niche book.
Even if they're not interested on those first chapters and reading every word and learning how the package was designed or learning how the engineering test models made the cut the steel and, you know, all the different blah, blah, blahs. Even if they're interested in that, flipping through it is just gorgeous and you get to see crazy shit. I have seen personally the color studies for Zorana and what could have been with Zorana. And some of those color studies are absolutely my favorite Zorana, which we'll never have. But if you didn't get lucky enough to happen to see them at Ron's booth at a Star Wars show that other Joe people weren't at,
yeah,
or been to his house, you can open up your books and see these things.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of what I have for Zorana. I mean,
well, I'm using her as an example, but I mean, Monkey Wrench. Monkey Wrench was thick. The Snow Serpent, you know, Strato Vipers. Like, you just, there's a lot in there, man.
Like I said, a lot of these guys held on to stuff. Even as Rana, I'd seen it at Ron's and I'd taken photos. Unfortunately, I'd already featured her. So one of those things, right? I have nice, clean pictures of them for the most part. Yeah, I mean, it's just been very fortunate. You know, a lot of this, some of us had come from Hasbro people, others collectors. You know, there's a gentleman at one point who bought a lot of artwork from people. And, you know, we had an agreement and did some trades and stuff to kind of allow me to photograph his collection at that time. And, you know, hired a photographer and all that fun stuff. you know, it's been a very, you know, there was some cleanup on that stuff, of course. I mean, all this stuff I had to clean up, especially, you know, what people may not know, a lot of that presentation art was folded over in a binder.
Sure.
So where that fold mark is, you know, it's a lot of cleanup, a lot of Photoshop, and you know, I'm not the best at Photoshop. It's tedious. You know, some of the stuff, it just took me forever, but I have a pretty good system, like I said. Now designing the books, even like right now when I'm looking at 14, because I know it's essentially going to be my last book, that's kind of where 13. 13 is a little bit thicker. It's going to be slightly thicker than the normal one. And that's where the written part was a challenge, because I had to make sure, am I going to include the commercial stuff in this one or the next one? It fit perfectly how it is because the sales just ended on the page it ended. And I was able to jump into the artwork. And, you know, there's a lot more. There's 80 pages of just art, which normally the whole book is 80. Now you have the 80, and then you tack on the, I want to say it's 9 pages, including the intro and the preface and then table content. Like, you know, there's a consistency. There's some pages where I wish I could just eliminate and say, I don't want those pages, but you know what I mean? Like the preface or the intro. I mean, I like the intro because I do show some cool photos. Like on this one, I have some fun photos I'll be sharing out. You know, one person that unfortunately had passed away, and I never met him, never talked to him, but it was suggested by someone that I reach out to his spouse and ask her for permission and maybe get a picture. Or they just said, I really wish you can feature him. And so I was like, well, and I found a spouse and I messaged her and I said, you know, I'd like to honor your husband. And
that's awesome.
Yeah, she was so grateful and provided the picture a couple of days later. So, it's an old picture. I mean, he looks like he's, I think, in his 20s, but he looks like a teenager.
Sure, but that's still incredible.
Yeah, we laughed. She and I laughed about it because they met at Hasbro, where she met him. You know, those are the things. I've been very fortunate where most of the people I've talked to over the years are still with us. Some are, of course, but even like someone like Bob Prupus, who lived a very long life. I still send his daughter a copy. Her and her family have a copy of the series. And that's one thing I do. So now all the Hasbro guys, you know, a lot of these guys who have helped out or, you know, are helpful in a certain, like if a certain issue, they're helpful in providing information. You know, that's probably the only volume they really maybe care about. So that's the one I generally will send them something. But you know, a lot of designers, though, because they're designed in every book, you know, they generally provide them a copy of it as a token of thanks.
Yeah, the book wouldn't be here without them. We wouldn't be collecting without them.
And that's the thing. When I first started, you know, I met Ron at JoeCon 2010. That's why it was such a instrumental JoeCon, because I wanted to go to Hasbro and see it. You know, meeting Ron, you know, the whole thing was, well, number one, he, you know, was a big part of the inspiration behind it. Number two, without his support, I mean, without his, you know, support on all this, where was I going to go? Because the original idea was to show package art. I was just going to, you know, I had my website at the time, dansjoes.com, right, for many years. You know, and I remember talking to Paloma at one point about, you know, because he had his loose stuff. And I talked about like doing a book of just carded figures, kind of like what Carson's doing. But my goal was to show the carded figure and then have a Rudat or Kunitz or Cassidy or whoever share out like the inspiration behind it. Because again, I didn't know all this stuff existed. And so I remember asking Ron a question. I saw the email and he's like, why didn't do the package art? So I don't know why I did that. You know, because I was like, why did you do this on the pack? And he's like, or why does he have different color hairs? And he's like, yeah, I didn't do the paintings. And it's like, I knew it, didn't know it. Like I knew like Hector did it, but I was still like so green to it in some ways where I was just like, yeah, that kind of makes sense. Yeah. Like, I just assumed like he had some part of it, you know, which he didn't. I mean, he did, but he didn't.
That's still incredible.
So it's kind of funny how it all started out. But yeah, I mean, if I didn't have his and you know, Wayne Luther, even Wayne was still at Hasbro. And I remember reaching out and, you know, he had talked to someone at Hasbro and said, you know, unfortunately, I can't really, you know, be part of it and whatnot because he still worked there. And then he retired. So, you know, a lot of people retired 2014-ish, right when I was kind of getting ready to launch and stuff. So people who maybe I didn't ever met or maybe at that time, you know, didn't feel that they can share out information or whatever, you know, jumped on. And I'm glad they did because, I mean, again, without them, the book series wouldn't be. I mean, that's besides the first part of the book, which like you're talking about earlier. And I probably don't even talk about that much. Like I talk about a lot of the art pages because I think that's what people are interested in. But yeah, I mean, there's so much stuff in the beginning that if you're into toys and you're into the history of how things were made and before computers and all that, it does lay it out pretty well. The amount of support I've gotten over the years and the friendships I've created, and I'm very grateful for, and you know, I need to get up there again. And I try to do that reunion every couple of years with these guys, and it's very intimate with them. It's just them being one to one another. They don't have to, they can be themselves, you know, they don't have to be in convention mode where, they can shoot the crap and just have a beer with one another at the bar and not feel like, they have to put on a show, I guess.
I think that's incredible. Dude, I've just been enjoying, I've been enjoying the books for a while. And I enjoy when we get to sit down, whether you bring something crazy like a Bacall book to Joe Fest, or whether we just sit at the bar and just chat, or whether we're talking about our kids online. It's just, it's nice and it's fun. So to be able to do something a little more formal tonight to continue to help get your word out, I love your product. And I think that anybody that picks it up is going to love it if they love G.I. Joe, unless they're really just buying to sell and couldn't give a shit. They're going to love it. And I would love to see more of this in other toy lines. But at this point, like, everybody else has got to catch up to what G.I. Joe does. We got too many amazing people in the trenches, yourself being one of them.
Yeah, there's so many projects. And I'm hoping long term, these stories can live on. And I put my little stamp on the history of Joe, and I try to teach my kids, if you're passionate about something too, go for it, push yourself, a lot of time spent on it, but you had to make some sacrifices, and I had to, learn how to balance out family and books and collecting, and took some time at times, but overall, it's been a lesson to them too. I mean, I know sometimes they're like, oh, you're working on your book, or, G.I. Joe. They get it, but they get it, but they don't.
Sure.
But hopefully long term, when they're older, I love for them to be like, damn, like, that's really cool what you did. They don't have to be into it, that's fine, but just to say it's really cool what you did and why I did it, to really honor the guys and gals who worked on the brand and stuff.
Let's end it here. Thanks again for spending time with us discussing toys and other geeky things. Our logo was made by Rhino. The music we use was created by Self Help. You can find Joel on Instagram at Order of Battle Pod. Jason is on Twitter at Order of Battle PD. Our email is orderofbattlepod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you, and thank you for your likes, comments, outreaches, and just being here with us.
This has been the Order of Battle.